Hey, everyone. Welcome to the inaugural Ag Uncensored podcast with actual hosts this time. This is my first episode. I am your host, Nathan Filiti. If you haven't met me before, I guess I am me. I am a kind of a so-called appropriately cynical ag tech mentalist, as I call myself, as which you maybe see on the details. But anyways, I wanted to do a little intro before this first one, as this podcast is a little different. The main part is I did in person with my guest, which is the new CEO of Farmer's Edge, with Vibhor Arora. And I actually don't live that far away from their main headquarters in Winnipeg, so I drove up there and actually did the interview in person, and I think it turned out okay. So, but it did go a little long, about an hour and 40 minutes. So I might break it down into two parts. You'll find that out by the time this is all put together, I guess, as I'm doing this a little bit before that. Anyways, what I wanted to do a little intro for was around just Farmer's Edge themselves. They are an enigmatic ag tech company that's been around for now, 19 years. And actually, I have a history of working close with them in the past when they actually first started. And so I wanted to just frame that up a little bit, as it's kind of a different story with all this. It's definitely more personal. And I have been a pretty big critic of Farmer's Edge in the last 10 years once they started raising a bunch of money and doing all sorts of big things. And then things haven't worked necessarily some, and other things have gotten in the way. And now they have a new CEO. But to kind of frame it as I got to know them very well and what they were doing, especially the original founders with Wade Barnes and Curtis McKinnon. And I kind of want to just tell that story a little bit to kind of set the framework why this is different for someone like me doing it than maybe someone else, as it's a little more internal and it goes back to so many things we were doing and then where things changed and where they went, and then now where they're going. So while this podcast is going to talk about where they're at now, a little bit of the change they've had to do with the last couple of years or last year with the transition to old leadership to new leadership, and then kind of where they're going, all the new tools, all that fun stuff. But we don't dive too much into the past, as there's plenty out there to see. I don't need to tell you everything. You can go look at press releases or other people's comments. There's people out there that have plenty to say about it. But there's not a lot said about kind of the early years, which I call it between 2005 when they started and 2011. So to give a little context, my initial history with them started with my family's company, SatShot, which my dad started in 1994. So he's already into this 11 years, and he was actually working with a group called Double Diamond Agronomy, which Wade and Curtis were working with, and they were using our SatShot system to create variable rate maps and soil testing points for with zones based on satellite imagery. And Wade and Curtis were interested in, you know, not working for somebody and doing their own thing. And before they actually started the company, from how my dad puts it, as he recollects, even though it was a really long time ago, they met in the early winter of 2005. They actually came down to our little office in Mattock, North Dakota, which is about 2 hours south of Pilot Mound, Manitoba, where they were out of. And they sat down and tried to figure some stuff out. They wanted to use our program to use imagery to scale their agronomy and do it a little differently than others. Maybe I wouldn't say do it right or wrong. Just, you know, they want to do it at scale and really grow. That was always the goal. And we helped them do that. We had the right tools to help them expand that way. And they added more agronomists and we had a really close working partnership. It wasn't just they were using our software and they were just a client. We were, you know, hands-on, very close. You know, Wade would talk to my dad 2-3 times a day, it seemed, from what I remember. And they were really close. Then, you know, in 2011, things ended for our relationship. And there's a bunch of stuff I could go through there. I'm not going to do that. There's good, bad, and ugly to it all. I'll just say that. But in that time frame, when we were working close, they were actually our Canadian exclusive dealer for a while, because Acres got up to 600,000 acres, I think, in 2010, maybe a little higher even. And we were introducing them a lot, having a lot of co-meetings together. We were actually talking about them doing an exclusive through us in the United States, which led to talks about maybe we merge and maybe we build a bigger farm management system, which they ended up doing anyways. just without us, which is fine. It's business is how it's how it works sometimes. And so it's really just an interesting time frame because, you know, without them, we probably wouldn't have got to where we were at and maybe couldn't have continued. You know, it's still alive today, but, and they maybe wouldn't have got to where they're at. I don't know. I'd say we were integral to ourselves in the time frames we were. We were very close. We helped each other a lot, got to know each other really well. So it kind of leads into this whole podcast of, it's a little different perspective for me. And I kind of talk through that a little bit as, you know, there's more emotion to it for someone like myself compared to just someone interviewing them. And the whole goal of this whole podcast in any realm is get more raw, have a more kind of dig down a little deeper, maybe more of that emotional stance into everything ag tech and agriculture, ask some different questions and get into it a little differently. But anyways, I could talk and talk about this. I just want to do a quick intro to set this up with my interview with Vipor. I think it went well and hopefully enjoy and subscribe to my YouTube channels, other podcast parts, follow me on social media, comment, share, all those fun things. But without further ado, I enjoy my interview with Vipor of Farmer's Edge. Thanks. Thanks, everyone, for coming on to my new podcast called Ag Uncensored. And this is the kickoff video podcast for kind of a series of things I'm going to be doing. I talked a little bit about it, the previous little segment here. But just to get into it, the first one interview I'm having with the new CEO or fairly new CEO of Farmer's Edge, Vipor Arora. And, you know, with how this came up, I'll kind of get into that a little bit, but make sure, and I'll do the normal kind of things here, is subscribe, like, and share this post. And hopefully you guys do too after it all. But Vipor, I guess to start, I think just to get things going, I think people just maybe want to know about you, just kind of
sure
your personal just story, you know, share from childhood if you want, you don't have to. Anything else, your likes, dislikes, family life, whatever. So I'll kick things off. And once again, thanks for being on the inaugural video podcast. So,
you know, thanks so much, Nathan. You know, congratulations on starting the series. And I love the name Ag Uncensored. So, you know, good luck to you. And yeah, so, you know, maybe just a little bit about myself. And I've got an unconventional background. I grew up in India and I started my career in the hospitality industry back in India. I worked for a few 5-star full-service hotels, you know, in India. And how that came about was my father was in the army and he wanted me to go to the forces because my brother, who's younger to me, he went to the Indian Navy. And I was a little bit unconventional, not trying to kind of follow the path. And hospitality management was a big thing at the time, you know, when I graduated from school. So I ended up joining hospitality management. And my first job was actually as an intern in a restaurant where I was like busing tables for about 18 hours a day. For some of your viewers who probably been to India, you know, hospitality is a big thing there. The hotels are like full service hotels and, you know, it's a hardworking environment. But I learned a lot, you know, I learned while I was busing tables for like 18 hours a day, you know, 6 days a week, I learned dignity of labor, you know, and my father always taught me that, you know, no job is menial and, you know, you got to grow through the ranks. And, you know, that was my big lesson as part of my stint in hospitality. And I think the other piece which I learned was you always have to exceed the value that you're providing to the customers, which is you have to give them value more than what they're paying you for. And traditionally in India, customers are like, you know, they're God and we treat them, you know, really, really well. So that kind of sentiment stayed with me. And I spent about 5 years in the hospitality industry in India. And then I started, I shouldn't say getting bored, but I was looking at the next challenge.
Sure.
And that's when I transitioned completely, you know, to a different industry, which was information technology. And I joined a company called Infosys there, which is one of the, you know, India's.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. They're really big into technology development and you know, and outsourcing and that kind of stuff. So I was handling a, you know, global team there across five countries. And that's where I learned how to, you know, really build and commercialize, you know, cutting edge technology mm-hmm. solutions for our global customers. And, you know, so, and I did that for 5 years. And then again, I had the same inkling of, you know, trying to do something, you know, something new. And I had not done my MBA at the time. So that is when I decided to come to the US to do my MBA. And so I landed in Boston, and my plan was to actually go back to India after graduation. But, you know, the rupee to dollar ratio, you know, and the student loans at the time were like, you know, not in favor. Amazon happened to be on campus.
Oh, perfect.
And, you know, how you go for, you know, these presentations at, you know, in grad school. So I happened to meet with one of the senior leaders at Amazon, and he said, you've got an interesting background with customer experience and technology and operations, and, you know, maybe could be a fit. So, but long story short, I got hired on campus by Amazon, and I spent my first couple of years in the States as part of their operations leadership program.
Okay.
And so I was in Lexington, Kentucky, you know, thoroughly enjoyed my time there. And it's
all relatives in Kentucky, and it's Kentucky.
Yeah, it's Kentucky. So, you know, they're big fans of, you know, basketball and, you know, the Derby and the Bourbon. And plus I had a great experience, you know, in the US. And at the time they were actually looking for somebody to come to Canada.
Okay.
Canada back, and this is, I'm talking about 2014. After a couple of years I spent at Amazon, and to my surprise, nobody else wanted to actually go because, you know, taxes were much higher in Canada.
Sure.
And, you know, the weather most places was relatively colder. So, you know, as I've always followed that unconventional path, I said, I raised my hand and I said, okay, I'll go, but I'll only go for a year and see if things don't pan out. Always, you know, should have the option of coming back. And so my first year in Canada with Amazon translated into almost an 8-year-long stint
mm-hmm.
wherein, you know, I came and Amazon was pretty much existing, but, you know, it was about 500-600 people at the time, really, you know, top line was in millions of dollars. But, you know, when I saw the opportunity, because Canada was at a very different adoption curve when it came to, you know, e-commerce adoption, because people still wanted to go to Best Buys and Target. Target existed at the time in Canada and have the tactile feel of things and not really order online.
Well, I suppose the infrastructure, roadways and all that it's just different. I mean, there's the one Trans-Canadian.
Yes.
I mean, different challenges for sure.
Yeah, different challenges. The ecosystem, I would say, existed, not probably as advanced as the US, but the logistics providers were there. The internet penetration was happening. And so I said, okay, this is a pretty big opportunity, you know, for this business to grow. And so over the span of 8 years, my team really kind of focused on delivering the right customer experience, adding a lot of selection to the Canadian website. So we diverted a lot of traffic back from the Amazon.com website back to .ca. And the business just, you know, grew exponentially. And I rose to become the president for Amazon Canada Fulfillment Services. And at the time, the team had grown from about, I think, 500-600 people back in 2014 to about close to 40,000.
That's
a lot of people. And so that was a fantastic experience in terms of, you know, how you truly scale the, you know, customer experience in a different market. And I spent a decade by the time at Amazon. And again, you know, trying to look for, you know, what's the next challenge and what's...
But you were used to the cold by this point in time. And
you know, I landed in Toronto, but...
That's not cold.
But then I couldn't handle the cold in Toronto.
I'm sure, yeah.
So we ended up moving to Vancouver. So I'm based out of Vancouver, British Columbia. And so it was interesting that we were supposed to go back, but then ended up staying here. The business became big and... You know, but then I was deep down, I was very proud of what I was able to do at Amazon, but was looking for a opportunity, not actively looking, but back of my mind, I wanted to, you know, get involved with something which was I would say more meaningful, but also had that angle of technology wherein I could kind of bring in my expertise. And that's when coincidentally I happened to meet the founder of Fairfax, you know, at a, you know, social setting. And they were looking for somebody to come to Farmer's Edge. And Farmer's Edge, you know, was not on the radar at the time for me.
Yeah. So you didn't really know much about agriculture and kind of the modern sense around everything. Just randomly driving by and didn't know of the history and everything.
Absolutely.
And all that. Yeah. So, but yeah, keep going.
And when I looked at, you know, Farmer's Edge as a company, obviously it was at a different scale and different point. And Fairfax had just, I would say, taken it public the year before in 2021. But when I started looking at the macro opportunity, you know, just all these industry reports indicate the macro challenges around, you know, food gap, land gap, you know, sustainability challenges. But then I dove a little bit deeper and saw, okay, what has technology kind of done in ag, you know, all along? And I was surprised at the number of players which existed within ag tech.
Yeah, it went from like, because I've been around it since like 94, since my father first created his company, Southshot. And for, I don't know, probably up to like 2010, 11.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a good old boys network. There was like 50 of us. Right. Kind of groups, and we all go to the same conferences, and it would fit into a kind of a generally smaller hotel. And then things went crazy. I'll kind of dive into that later, just with kind of the growth of everything. So
I was excited about, you know, the number of players in the ecosystem, but at the same time, the narrative was quite, you know, the opposite in terms of the value the ag tech, you know, solutions have created. And, you know, and then it just kind of made perfect sense looking at Farmer's Edge and technology and some of the history, because this was also, I would say, a turnaround opportunity. And I've always been entrepreneurial, you know, within my, you know, career. So that's when I thought, okay, this is a perfect opportunity with the backing of a, you know, partner like Fairfax, you know, to kind of, you know, tie in all the pieces of where my background can help. And, you know, what basically the industry needs in terms of, you know, new solutions, and perhaps I would say in a much more simplified manner. So I joined Farmer's Edge in June of 2020, you know, two. And since then, we've kind of kept our heads down, trying to really optimize the business model, really listen to the customers. And I'll dive into a little bit more.
I think one of the, just kind of a, there's a little thing I remember hearing back when Fairfax first got into investing into Farmer's Edge, and it was from another colleague who knew the owner quite well. And stocks were just going up crazy, investment firms are making money, big exits and all this. And once the deal happened, apparently he said to the main owner of Fairfax, he's like, he didn't even know what happened. It was like, I guess we have too much money and things are going really well. So, hey, let's join into the fun. It was kind of a surprise, but not a surprise, because, you know, they were looking into getting into ag technology. But I just remember that little thing and, you know, seeing where everything's gone. I mean, clearly, yeah, Fairfax has been putting a lot down. And
yeah,
I mean, even with some of the tough numbers and changes and all that, they seem to be like, hey, we're in this and doing this. And I mean, do you feel that kind of you coming from an outside perspective is that's the reason, because things were maybe too internally in ag and they're maybe a little worried that wasn't enough, or things could get too, I can't think of the word right now, but maybe almost closed-minded because you're too much into ag. I mean, I realize that myself sometimes. I'm like, I didn't think of it that way from a larger business sense. Do you think that's part of the idea of bringing someone like you on?
Yeah, I would think so. But I think the bigger, you know, objective was to really make sure that, you know, Farmer's Edge is one of their investments. You know, they are going to be in it for the long run. And I know Prem, and I've met him several times. He's a role model for a lot of us here in Canada. And he's a true believer in building Canadian champions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of us understand, you know, collectively that, you know, the macro opportunity still exists. it's, you know, the, you know, how do you overcome kind of the near-term challenges and still kind of keep a long-term view? And they've been, I would say, quite pleased with the progress that we've made in the last year and a half.
Sure.
In terms of the positive changes on culture and on execution and so on and so forth. And, you know, that's why they've kind of now offered to take the company private, which is also, you know, probably a good decision in the near term in terms of, you know, how we want to operate.
Yeah. And we'll get into the weeds, I suppose, a little more here, but kind of to switch gears a little bit. So getting into kind of how we met.
Yeah, you should open the story.
Yeah, it's great
because
as people are probably listening, I call myself an appropriately cynical ag tech mentalist, which in itself makes I don't even know what that is, but I like it. But yeah, I've been a little more poignant towards issues in the ag industry, but especially the technology industry, because I've been in it a lot. I've seen a lot of things. I mean, there's. And I'll illustrate, maybe talk a little bit up before this, you know, the start here and then a little bit into it. But I was there at the beginning of when Farmers Edge started. And when I was younger, when a lot of new things came on and I could see a lot of things work, things not work, you know, you get the ups and downs. There's no shortage of stories. Hence why I'm doing this, is to kind of get other people on to illustrate those stories, the good and bad, why this didn't work, the mistakes made. And just talk about it in a real sense, because while a lot of other things can kind of get lost in marketing,
right?
And everyone's got to do it. I mean, yeah. And the video, getting to that, everyone's got to do that. Put out a video saying, "Hey, we're doing this and whatnot." And that's kind of where this started. Is you guys put out a video and you're a public company, you got to put something out. But as I do, I kind of look into it a little deeper. And I think with all the crazy things that even happened within Farmers Edge the last 10 years, for sure, once a bunch of money came in and expansion and all that, and some things worked, some things didn't. And then with the going public and, you know, the price dropping a lot, people were like, what the hell's going on? And so I think I put kind of my inner ear to the broad sense of ag tech and saying, I want to hear more. Like, minute 45 video, it's like, and you haven't done a lot of, like you said, marketing and
yeah.
exposure, because you're trying to kind of loop things in and kind of reorganize, reset, whatnot. So I get that, but it's like, I want more. And so I made a little repost and I can't even remember the words on it. Someone can look it up if they want, or I'll maybe post a link on it on the video or something.
Yeah.
But I think what was different, you know, usually when I do that, the CEO from the other company, you know, be it FBN or Indigo or others that I've kind of criticized, they don't reach out to me and say, "Hey, how are you? Who are you? I would like to meet you. We should talk." And I think that's a big, for me, at least being in this, is a big just change in it all from what, you know, I'd see before, is because you understand that. I mean, as you said in the message, hey, we're open to being criticized. Everyone is, but it's how you kind of roll with it after that I think is really important, because I think that's one of the problems in ag technology is, yes, some of it's new, not everything's worked, and people have had a really hard time taking criticism in it. And so I applaud you for that, is reaching out. And then, you know, we met and a thing kind of sparked with me, and I've always been wanting to do kind of a podcast or something like that. And it's like, well, this would be a great opportunity to kind of launch something off. You know, there's an interesting storyline as me and my dad and our family's company was involved in the beginnings of Farmers Edge back in, actually before it started in 2005 and up till 2011, a lot of great things, expansion, kind of, you know, it was smaller then and a lot of fun things, and got to know the former founders, Wade and Curtis, really well. But then, you know, things change and there's been a lot going on, and it's like, there's a story to tell here. And I think a lot of people got caught up in, yeah, what didn't work. And I'll dive into that a little bit. Some of the things that did, some things that didn't. So I think it's just worth a good story to talk about and get real and get a little uncensored as
totally
promotes. So,
yeah.
You know, and so diving into kind of, I guess.
So let me
go ahead.
You know, let me make a quick comment there, because because I'm glad that you commented, you know, on the video. And you know, I've always kind of, you know, lived my personal professional life, and there's usually very little kind of, you know, distinction in the way I approach both these aspects of my life. But, you know, some of the things which are extremely important to me is, you know, whenever there's a problem, we want to address it head on, right?
I agree.
And and not hide behind the scenes, because one is, it's an opportunity to tell the story, and often to correct the narrative if the story is not accurate. And in your case, the story was absolutely, you know, accurate, and there's a history with you know, the company, and all of us are aware, and we are trying to be now forward looking, and you know, with what future holds for us. But you know, I think trust, integrity, honesty are, you know, core to at least my value system and my team's value system. So we thought it was, you know, the best approach in that scenario, you know, wherein there is a criticism, is you know, reach out and have a transparent, honest conversation. And I'm also happy that you commented, because then that's how we got to know each other, right? And we are here doing this podcast. So,
and I think that's one of the things that sometimes those things just lead to the next thing and the next thing. And like I said, I think there was a story needing to be told. I don't know if that could have been told before or not, at least by me. I'm not sure about that, but you know, here we are. So I hope it continues. I mean, so any other CEOs out there looking, let's do something. I don't know if it'll be in this format exactly. I live pretty close to Winnipeg. So, So we went over kind of the base pieces of, you know, how you got here, your background and everything. And I mean, all on the surface, this is, I mean, like I said, when I met you, I mean, it was a great experience. I was like, this is kind of refreshing. And I know there's also, you know, this history of what did happen. So one of the questions I think that a lot of people have is, you know, there's a lot going on, different development and this or that. Like, what was day one like? And like, what was the first week, first month? Like, how did that whole progression go? Because I know when we talked before, you mentioned you looked at some things and were like, okay, that needs to change, like right away. Yeah. And other things, it's like, okay, that's going to take some time. But can you talk through more of, you know, what you saw right away, and then kind of what changes were immediate, and what, you know, things kind of have shifted from the before times?
Yeah. No, I think it's a great question. And I'm actually going back to that, you know, day one when I came in. And so I've always, throughout my career, I've taken quick decisions, but not without really observing things and trying to, you know, make sure that the anecdotes that I'm hearing from the field, they're actually matching the data. But what was very evident to me from the time I stepped in was there was a lot of passion in the employees that, sure, you know, people wanted to, all the team members, you know, they wanted to do well. They wanted to make sure the company is successful. And they believed in, you know, the mission that they were on, which is not always commonplace when you're going through a situation like, you know, the company was going through, which was a big positive. So I was super happy about that. The second piece, which was also, you know, very kind of immediately clear, was just the robustness of the technology solution, the Farm Command platform and all the other predictive analytics, the soil intelligence, so on and so forth, variable rate technology, the hardware implementation. That was almost like cutting edge. In fact, you know, ahead of its time.
There was a lot of you know, good pieces.
Yeah.
It seemed there was a lot of pieces.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
too many to almost manage properly or market properly. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. So, and exactly. So those two pieces are very, very clear. And then what was also becoming increasingly clear to me, that I say this in a different way, what you just said, is we had a problem of plenty. Like, we had some like 80 plus initiatives on the technology roadmap.
Yeah.
And for the size of, you know, this company, it's, you know, or for any company for that matter, it's, there's so much of scope creep, you know, then you keep shifting priorities, you know, from month to month. And then the teams kind of really don't have clear direction in terms of what's urgent versus important and near term versus short term. And so that was basically my initial kind of actions was to just kind of remove a lot of noise, you know, focus on what we are as a company, which is we are a technology company and we want to be the technology enabler for everybody who's got anything to do with, you know, with agriculture, whether it's a grower, whether it's the ag retailers or the co-ops or large enterprise partner. Mm-hmm. And I think, so clarifying that, you know, reason why we exist was paramount, and we launched something called One Farmer's Edge Plan. And
see the little signs all.
Yeah, you see little signs, yeah. So, you know, so I'm a big believer that, you know, you have to really focus on the culture, mm-hmm. apart from, you know, all the typical business strategy and execution pieces. And because culture, in my opinion, is my definition is like values and behaviors. So we kind of articulated, you know, a set of 7 values. And one of them is really focusing on the customer and listening to the customer and, you know, basically delivering on what they want. So we made, you know, those kind of pivots. But over a period of time, I think, you know, we were able to really narrow in the focus and focus on, like, to give you a data point, like, we have like 4 things on the technology roadmap right now versus the 80 that we have previously.
Well, that's a nice change. Well, it reminds me of back in, I can't remember the year. It's probably like 2020 or 2021. It's a press release that was put out. It's like, here's the 99 things we're going to do this next like quarter or something. And I was like, whoa, that's a lot. Like, cool if it all happens, you know, that's grand. But it's like, that's like, I've done software development or, you know, manage program management, market, sell, all this. Like, it was just a lot. And it was like, I guess to a point is maybe, like you said, you're, you know, listening to the customers. Like, sometimes you can listen too much to the customers, especially in the technology scope. And I've seen this with lots of companies, and everyone's to blame. I'm to blame in aspects of my career too. And cause you don't want to say no, but sometimes, especially, you know, you go into a field with a farmer and you're like, oh, I'd really like it if this, or, you know, I want this to work better. And you're like, yeah, we all want that. But
yeah,
you know, and in a lot of cases, like, well, you know, the software costs what it is, and, you know, the data pieces cost what it is, the service costs what it is.
Right.
And many times, you know, especially in ag, because there's a disconnect with development of software and tech and kind of the real world of farming at times. And I found that, I think, especially with a lot of the influx of money that's came in the last 10 years from VCs, whatnot, we maybe tried to just do too much because farmers were like, I want this. Agronomists were like, I want this and this. And it's really expensive to develop.
Right.
And really time consuming, which is time is money. And then it creates this complexity. And I think that's some of where some of the challenges, you know, during the kind of build up expansion of Farmer's Edge before kind of ran into. It's like, well, we could do this. We could do this. This customer says, hey, we'd pay $100,000 if you do this. And then you get into it. And at the end of it, you're like, holy crap, we didn't make any money. We just lost money.
Yeah.
Cause you don't want to say no, cause you want to get ahead of the next person or the next person. I think we're all finding that kind of as a ag tech reset of sorts, which I've kind of called out for years, and it's kind of starting to happen.
Yeah.
But it's refreshing to know that you were like, hey, let's just focus on some things. Cause I think that's where everyone's getting to. Cause that's where you gotta be.
Yeah.
So, I mean, getting into, you know, your first days, weeks, I'm guessing, have you talked to like basically every employee and kind of just get to know them and stuff like that, I'd assume?
I would say most of them, yeah, because initially I was on a field trip and I went to meet the customers, the employees, visited the labs. In fact, last week I was in Iowa for a business meeting, visited our soil testing lab there, and it's an amazing facility, like, you know, cutting edge, best in class, super proud about, you know, what we're doing with the lab and the soil testing space. In December, I was in Brazil. Mm-hmm. So that's another, you know, growth market for us. And I met a lot of customers there, but a relatively smaller team there, but really passionate, you know, individuals trying to make a difference. So yeah, it's been quite insightful, I would say.
So one thing I'll ask, so, I mean, clearly, like I said, there's, you know, original leadership left 2 years ago or so. And then, you know, looking there, looking for newer people. other people probably left for different reasons, whatever, turnover. Is there kind of like a sentiment, or maybe not sentiment, not the right word, but a descriptor of how the employees, especially after time, you know, half a year or whatever, compared kind of the previous leadership or the process, maybe just the management process overall, and how it's changed? Like, is there like a specific descriptor? I have one in mind that we kind of talked about on our call, because it seems like there's a different mentality. And yeah. I guess, is there a comparative kind of descriptor that you could talk more on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm sure there are quite a few, actually, you know, comparables. And I think for what it's worth, like, in all fairness, I think, you know, we don't want to delve into the past issues, you know, quite a bit. But I think the other pieces, even some of the market conditions which were there, you know, when the previous leadership was running the company, you know, like carbon for that matter, right? So those promises did not really pan out because of, you know, just the regulatory environment or how, you know, things have panned out, right? So, you know, so I just want to make sure that it was not all about, I would say, just execution. But I think what I think the employees will say, or they're telling us now through our, you know, feedback surveys, and I've done, I don't know what, over 12, 13 town halls since the time I came in, because I want to make sure that all of our, you know, team members are informed as to, you know, where we are and where we are going. So I think I addressed the culture piece, you know, before, but I think on the specific strategy and execution, you will see a very clear alignment in terms of, you know, where we are going with our services, which is the market we want to cater, and what do we want to do, which is basically, to keep it simple, we want to offer the best-in-class technology solutions. We want to be complementary in the marketplace with all of, you know, the other partners. We don't want to be competitive, which has been the case in the past.
Well, yeah, that was always one of the challenges that I always see, and it kind of illustrates a main one. And I, you know, there's some major, I'd say, kind of points in time with the history of Farmers Edge. And I think of it, you know, from being the beginning when, like I said, my family's company was there, it was kind of a grassroots effort. Like,
yeah,
hey, let's get some imagery, build some zone, do some soil testing.
Yeah.
Let's just go out and do something and let's do some scouting. And then,
right,
you know, they would add some other software pieces, other data.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was pretty straightforward. It was a service.
Yes.
And we were helping with that service. And then things kind of expand a little bit. That's near when we were ending with them. So when the soil lab came on, there was expansion into, you know, Russia and the Eastern Bloc countries, Ukraine, Kazakhstan. And a lot of that started kind of actually in 2007 for Agritechnica.
Right.
We were kind of building up to that as we connected Wade at the time with a colleague of ours, Howard Dahl, who opened up mass expanses of machinery into the former Soviet Union. And, you know, Agritechnica was this huge opportunity. And there's a whole other story. It's a different story. It's a fun story. Nothing wrong. Of course. And actually after that, Wade ended up going to Russia to another conference, and his translator ended up turning into his wife, and is at his wedding and everything. And like I said, I won't get into all the specifics, but a lot of things, you know, it started expanding into that. And then, you know, we were always talking about building, you know, about larger software, but yeah, there's different reasons why it didn't happen. But then that kind of expanded into that. And then like the first investment kind of round they did, you know, as big, but to the point, you know, beyond, you know, for things kind of almost overreaching the stuff with Planet Labs or Planet and the data, like that's a big poignant moment. I was thinking on the ride up here, and there's been other moments like that where it's like, hey, let's do this because of, we want to, you know, to the competitive advantage, like we're competing with everybody. Yeah. And it turned into, well, okay, we'll distribute it. We'll do this big exclusive. And it was a super expensive deal and a long term. And it kind of turned into this, well, others don't want to distribute with you because you're our competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And that became a broad scale problem And I think, I mean, just that deal in itself, the kind of this build up to like some of that, I think there was a meaning of, this is a good thing to do. This is, will build us up. And, but it kind of hurt, and it hurt other parts of the industry, especially around the Earth observation space. So, you know, it sounds like to me that you're looking deeper into it than maybe before, saying, like you said, we don't want to be competitive. So
yeah.
To what degree would you say you are unique, that you're not competitive in, or
yeah,
what are those things? Cause before there seemed like a lot, and you said, you know, there's different changes, things you've taken away. What are those things that you don't feel are competitive in the marketplace right now, or you guys are kind of out there?
Yeah. And I say that we want to be complementary and not being competitive. It's just because, you know, the nature of the challenges, whichever challenge you want to pick up, like, you know, there's a place for everybody and everybody can,
yeah,
you know, kind of exist together, right? Because at the end of the day, when I think about the growers and the number of, you know, technologies and things that they have to deal with, and they're running pretty much, you know, their own companies and managing their P&Ls, you know, and dealing with the controllables and also the uncontrollables, which means even if they do everything right, the outcomes may still not be where, you know, they need to be, right? Which is a tremendous opportunity on how Farmers Edge as a company and plus a lot of these other players can kind of help. But I think just specifically talking about the competition piece, like in the past, we've, you know, the company's tried hands in selling kind of, you know, imports or selling insurance products, like which are like typically traditional products. And
yeah,
and we are very clear now that we want to just help people in the agriculture community with our technology solutions. So we want to be in the background, being the enabler. Sure.
Yeah.
Right. And now, does that mean if we are able to work with another technology provider to, you know, offer better value to our end customer, we absolutely will do it.
Sure.
And I'll give you an example. So I was in India in January. We recently launched an innovation lab with our partner called LTI Mindtree. And the whole idea is, how do we customize the farm command solution for that Indian market?
Sure.
And the farms are smaller, you know, the pricing power, like the buying power, purchasing power is very different.
Mm-hmm.
How do you work with the enterprise partners? And we are actually, you know, having discussions with other ag tech providers who are there in India, who probably don't have technology which is as sophisticated as ours, but they have the local nuance and local knowledge, right?
Yeah, and that's a huge,
yeah,
you know, point. And I think, you know, part of that was trying to be built out. It was trying to be built out before, because, you know, there was a spread, let's get agronomists in different states,
right,
and build that. But it was kind of, it got to a touch point. It's like, okay, we're working with the farmers and the seed dealers, or we're having, like, there's just so many,
yes,
pieces. Like, we're directly with the farmers. We're just competing, yeah, against the co-op that has this other software service.
Totally.
But yet, yeah, we're trying to work with them,
yeah,
in this larger sense.
And yes,
it became confusing.
We confuse the partners. And, you know, there's like so many partnership press releases, you know, and, you know, it's just, you know, that's not an optimal way to approach, you know, any market for that matter, you know.
Yeah,
leave alone agriculture.
And I mean, and part of that can easily happen, because I mean, just with, I mean, Farmers Edge wasn't alone in this. Is, I mean, a lot of money raised, and
yeah,
you're trying to find product market fit,
right.
And to do that, yeah, you got to throw a lot of sticky things at a wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
Like I get it, but of course, in ag, it's a little different just because of the slow nature of things.
Yeah,
and. And yeah, of course, now through that, call it the last 10 years, you're finding out what didn't, you found out what didn't work a lot. I mean, there's variations in that.
I think the list of lessons learned is long, you know, and both internally as a company and, but also as, you know, as an industry and as a market. And, but I still remain very, very optimistic, and I call myself a rational optimist, you know, as my team kind of knows it. But any customer, and I flew about 70,000 miles last year, you know, meeting customers, meeting, you know, our partners, and I think there is still that in spite of, I would say, I shouldn't say a burnout, maybe that's a negative word, but the fatigue which has happened in ag tech with multiple seasons.
I think you call it burnout.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So
I have experienced in multi different levels over the years. Yeah,
so appreciate the validation, I would say then.
Yeah. But you know, the passion keeps everyone
alive.
And there was a lot of passion in all those agriculture. So it keeps us going.
Yes. And I'm a new person coming to agriculture, but I've, you know, built businesses in other industries before. And the fundamentals are here also, you know, the same. But whenever I'm talking to the customers and talking about the solutions and in a way that is easily understood, in a way it's palatable, in a way that it creates economic/commercial value for them, they're all ears. Mm-hmm. You know, and that gives me a lot of confidence in terms of, you know, just validating that our strategy, you know, we are on the right path. And then if we are able to execute and make sure that we are delighting the customer by creating value for them, we will be able to capture a portion of that value, you know, as a company, mm-hmm. right? And that's what is going to, you know, make us successful in the long run. So
going into, you know, we've gone through kind of this bits and pieces of the whole story here. And there are some pieces that I've talked through some other colleagues. And because I mentioned it to them, they're like, hey, would you ask this? So I have a few questions from some outsiders. Sure. I have a long list. I won't get to them all. But one is this, and I don't know if this is a carryover thing or what, but I'm assuming there's some legacy things from the past. I mean, I know there's some things from maybe past legal things or there's past contracts or whatever. But one question was, what is your message to farms that sign multi-year agreements for full service and local staff support? And now that the corporate strategy has changed to more virtual with fewer offers of staff and industry. So is there still a kind of a transition phase from that, or how are you approaching that?
I'm glad you asked, because I think there's I would say a bit of a, shouldn't say confusion, but lack of clarity, I would say. So when we pivoted to the virtual model, that was, we segmented our customer base into different markets. Mm-hmm. Like the primary markets will have full service. There's no change. Okay. The secondary markets was digital because there was a lot of fragmentation economically, did not make sense for us to provide the experience that we wanted to provide to our customers.
Sure.
So all of those customers in the secondary market were actually given that option to either move to a digital service, because we clearly, like I said, transparently, we told them, you know, this is a plan going forward. Mm-hmm. And we've seen a good, I would say, traction with, you know, our customers understanding, okay, that's the case. But obviously there are pockets and pieces where, you know, it does not meet the requirement. And plus there's no other local, you know, player. And we've made some exceptions in terms of how we continue to kind of support them for a little bit of an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. But if there are specific customers, you know, I'm happy to, you know, have them reach out to me and we can take a specific
look. I imagine if some of those customers there, they reached out already or trying to figure that out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, there's always going to be some legacy things from transferring from one vision to another or stuff like that.
Yeah. I think we, as a company goes through a turnaround and as we go through all these different changes strategically to make sure we are creating value for the end customer, there will always be examples like this. But my general notion is that we don't want to run into an expectation mismatch as we, you know, move forward. We want to, our say-do ratio has to be completely intact. Right. And, you know, so, But have them please reach out to me. And if we are able to, you know, make things work for them, we absolutely would. And if we're not, we'll at least be transparent in how we are kind of going to deal with them. So,
yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, every company, like I said, regardless of how it's changed or leadership or just vision or whatever, there's always little loose ends that you got to tie up. And I understand that 100%. Another question. I think I know there's probably so much you can talk to, but you know, from some of the past things and they're ongoing, there's, you know, some legal cases, you know, there was before the farm mobile stuff. I think most of that's got figured out. Maybe there's some other stages to that, or, you know, there's another one with Precision Weather Solutions. Is there anything you can speak to that? Cause I think that's a big question a lot of people have in general. Cause I mean, they're, they're what they are. There's yeah. lawsuits, there's this.
Right.
And it can bring a level of, okay, is that going to be detrimental to if I work with them?
Or, yes.
And it's public. There's things out there. I'm not going to get into all the details, but is there anything you can speak to some of those things and how they've transitioned from kind of the past and then kind of where they're at now?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you asked, because these are some of the, I would say, hard pressing questions, right? And even if customers say, we want to work with you, but we are unsure of the future viability, you know, of the company because of whether it's, you know, legal concerns or other financial concerns. I do want to say this, you know, Fairfax as a, you know, investor and as a backer of Farmers Edge, they've always been in their investments for the long run, right? And I probably wouldn't be in this, you know, place given just the uncertainty which was there, you know, with the company if Fairfax had not kind of assured us that, you know, they will, you know, continue to back it up. And things can change, but directionally, I think we feel that we are in a really good spot, you know, with the changes that we've made in the last, you know, year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And with regards to the, you know, legal stuff, I mean, you know it, you're from technology industry, you know, these type of lawsuits are kind of commonplace, but
everyone that there's money around wants to do someone else's money and it gets messy and it becomes, you know, I won't say whether it was right or wrong. And some of those things, like I said, they're legacies.
Yeah.
Like we were just talking about.
Yeah. So,
but there are things that happens.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, it's an ongoing kind of, you know, lawsuit, so I can't, you know, speak much, but we remain very confident in our position in terms of, you know, where we are on all of those kind of counterclaims or whatever. And we are happy to kind of work with individual customers, especially enterprise customers. If there are questions around continuity, we are happy to put it out there as part of the contract that we'll help them kind of transition out, if at all in an unlikely scenario, you know, there would be, you know, I would say a less optimal outcome for Farmers Edge.
Well, I think that, I mean, that's a good note, because I know of personal groups that are, that is one of those questions. And if, you know, if you're saying, hey, here's this and this and this, if this happens,
I mean,
it's maybe the best you can do. And, you know, it's at least honest.
Yeah.
I think that's a big difference from maybe whether before it was maybe kind of let's just keep this over here. I think being open and honest, like, okay, this is a thing, like we got to deal with it, is a good path.
Yeah.
So it's got a few more just general questions from some others.
Yeah.
I mean, as for
just before I lose my thoughts, you know, I would also say this, that a company like Fairfax, they've got a portfolio of investments. They wouldn't offer to take us private if, you know, they did not, you know,
that's a good point. I mean, they know.
Yeah. So they know. And based on discussions I've had with them, and I think personally, like, it, in spite of my kind of unconventional career path, this was opportunity which was, you know, it's wouldn't have been on my radar. So if I left company like Amazon, you know, running a large organization, being the president of the country, to come and, you know, work here, it's, you know, I truly believe in the mission that we are on, and I truly believe that, you know, this company has, you know, a positive future, and we're going to make it work. So, you know.
Well, and to that point, and I think you've spoken to it, but, you know, from farmers to different agronomists, maybe even different past workers in the company, I think one message when I've talked to others just throughout for a long time is, especially more recently, you know, there's a trust issue. And I think you've spoken a lot to how you're trying to regain that trust, but is there anything else that you'd want to speak to, that of other methods that you're working on to kind of open the door back up to maybe some of what the original visions were and where they maybe got kind of offshooted, but what are some of the other things you guys are doing about that?
That's another great question, because like I said, we had, you know, a lot of things on the technology roadmap. So that nuance really just did not stay internal. It also had eventually translated to the external ecosystem, like with the customers, because we've got this solution and that solution, we can do this. Because I think, just to be fair, the interoperability and the adjacencies with technology can be just, you know, that list can be long, to the point of confusing the heck out of our
customers. You can only integrate with so many integrations to integrate with integrations.
Yeah. Yeah. So the change that we have made is we are really telling our customers, okay, we have these two or three offerings. If you're an individual grower, we've got fertility variable rate technology that we want to go out with, you know, because, and part of that is also our soil testing services. So that's a must have for you, because a lot of digital solutions at this, you know, stage also, even in 2024, are probably not a must have. You know, people want to see what they are and, you know, what value can they provide. Plus there's a learning curve and an adoption curve. And, but
there is a lot of bits and pieces where, yeah, like I said, nice to haves, like,
yes,
need that, but that's nice. And
yes,
but there are some core things. And I mean, yes, you've always had some of those core things.
Yes. So we're staying to the core things. And so soil testing, for example, right? We will launch, we've already kind of started talking about it in the market, but we'll officially launch our kind of lab and soil testing services. And we are going out to the customer and saying, we'll give you a faster turnaround, we'll give you a cheaper price point, but over a period of time, we will help you reduce the cost of soil sampling through our, you know, virtual soil testing, you know, technology that we have.
Okay.
Right? So that's pretty simple and it is not confusing. And, you know, so that's like one offering, you know, that we're going to launch.
Well, it sounds like kind of like a new, I mean, as we were talking earlier, I was there back in the day when they bought the first soil lab, which is right east of town here. Yeah. And it was, I mean, yeah, it was a big, it made sense at the time. It was a big shift because they were doing a lot of stuff through AgVise at the time and going across the border. There's a lot of just different reasons.
Yeah.
And that was always one question that I was like, why aren't they diving into that more? And there's different economics of scale and it, you know, it's a lab, it's a place.
Yeah.
There's different infrastructure and costs, things there.
Yeah.
But I always thought that maybe would have been a better model to kind of link it and expand that a little more. Cause it's needed. It's one of those core things.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. And you said that new labs in Iowa, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, we've got a lab in Canada. We've got a lab in the US. We've all launched an innovation lab in India, which is not soil testing and it's an innovation lab. But the idea is that, okay, go to the customer and give them what basically they want. Right. And then plus we've got a host of other digital solutions. And if people are interested, they can, you know, we can add them as a bolt on. So that's on the, you know, the individual growers. For the enterprise customers and, you know, co-ops and ag retail customers, we are going to them with, you know, a simple solution, which is, and you'll hear this in the AgriTech in San Francisco next month. We're planning to launch something called managed services, which is because these big companies, you know, or small companies, relatively any enterprise company, you know, one is they have a very critical decision to make whether they build the technology in-house, but they don't have the expertise, or they buy it from somewhere, but the off-the-shelf solutions don't make sense, cannot be customized, et cetera, et cetera. So we are trying to go to them and say, okay, you know, this is our base fundamental core solution. We can build derivatives based on what you require. We can help, you know, license, white label it, and, you know.
So, okay, that's an interesting theme.
Yeah.
I know there was always kind of.
That's a scoop, by the way. It's in conception, you know, stage right
now. Well, I've always kind of thought that was. And I remember hearing like rumblings of maybe doing something like that in the past because there were so many different pieces you guys were building.
Yeah.
But at the time, like we talked earlier, there was kind of more, we'll compete against some of the other parts, which, and just, you know, almost kill through expansion and marketing and all that, which, I mean, it is what it is. But I will say though, I've dealt in that space a lot. So, where I worked from before was with Ag Integrated, which was dealing with a lot of background APIs, exchanges, data translation. And then it got bought by Telus, you know, the one of the largest companies in Canada. And that was the big thing is, okay, we'll build these back end because we got this software, we got this. So we'll have all these back end pieces. And I wonder if people have talked to you about this, and this is just a personal observation that I've dealt with, is there seems to be a want in a sense to do that, to say, okay, yes, building that component would cost me, you know, $5 million. I can license it for $250,000 or something like that.
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
On paper seems great.
Yeah.
One thing I always kind of found though is it's really hard to get the other group to have the internal people that want to own it.
Yes.
And it almost became more of a political thing. Yes. You could talk to a major ag retailer and be like, okay, we could do these and these modules. Here, you want these 10 things. We can do, say, 7 of them, and we can guide you with the other 3, or, hey, there's another group over here that can do the other 3, or maybe you build it yourself. And there almost became this inner political process, infighting over, you know, a program, be like, I can build that. I can do it in this many hours.
Yeah.
Or you don't need to do that. You know, we can do that. We just got to add this little line of code or something, which it's never that easy, as you've done.
Yeah.
Technology. But that's what the challenge always was. And then, you know, you get into license fees and they can build up, and then it's like, oh, I got to support the extra pieces on top of those modules. And it almost became like this I've known groups that have been trying to do it or have tried, and it almost becomes like, it can become this inner collapsing star.
Totally.
Really fast. Totally. So you're aware of that. So that's a good story.
Your observation is spot on. And when I go back to my time in Infosys, the change management internally in an organization, you know, which is trying to give you this type of project and then manage it, it's very hard. But I think we've got a good idea in terms of, you know, some of the pointed solutions we want to offer, which is, again, not offering, you know, the whole world in terms of we can change everything, but really customizing it based to, you know, on their need. But also have an element of how we take them through that change management process, because that's the most scary thing, right?
Well, you almost need like coaches.
Yeah.
Like just someone that's been like through different parts to be like,
right,
all right, I'm just going to sit with you.
Yes.
And make sure you don't overthink it.
Yes.
And follow
a
process.
So, and that's an excellent point, because you just don't need a salesperson who will sell you the deal and then a technology person who will build it. You need that interface in between, who will take them along and you know, whether it's an account manager or a program manager or whatever, a product manager. And why we think we are really positioned well to do that is because Fairfax spent over $100 million on the R&D of this company just to build, you know, the solution, right, over the years. So we have this unique combination of having in-field ag expertise, plus the soil labs, plus fertility offerings, along with the technology, you know, expertise that we have, right? And that, because you can challenge me and counter that by saying, okay, what, like, there are multiple technology providers who can do the same, but not a whole lot of them have this, you know, depth of in-field experience that, you know, we bring to the table.
Well, the one thing, you know, I'll say, and it's maybe kind of a scary point, is some of doing that from where I came from, tell us they're, I think they're still doing parts of that, but a lot of that whole thing from more of the precision ag side call of it.
Right.
They've basically dropped doing that.
Yes.
And then, you know, they're buying, I think, ProAgrica, or that's being worked on. That was a big thing that they wanted to do. That was, you know, there's just been plays at time. Of course, if you can learn from that and understand that it's a needed thing. It's just, and maybe that's, you know, going private. Maybe you can handle that a little differently, because those other groups, they were, I mean, TELUS as a whole, and then there's TELUS Ag, and there's TELUS, all these other pieces. Yeah. It almost is too much. It's just like,
it's too much. And
corporatist.
And I don't know, like, maybe give me your 2 cents on how you think that those integrations have happened, you know, and are they successful, right? And it's,
well, in those sense, I mean, when I was there, I mean, there was like in three years, what was 15 companies and like 1,500 people coming together. It's hard. I mean, that's a big task on its own. And then, you know, even from where Relics Group, I think they don't prior, I mean, they're a bigger group beyond that too. So I think maybe it's one of those things. I think if you can address that early, you know, with like Fairfax is supporting us on this, but they're not like being the ones doing it. Like we're going to do the job and trying to learn from it. So, you know, that's interesting. And I, like I said, I'm sure more will come out on that. And, you know, just as we're talking through this, you know, that expansion. So I, in the video that I criticized, you know, in December, I wrote down a piece here and tell me what it means. And maybe it means something totally different. So with going private, you know, it says increasing your cash position by 50 million. What does that exactly mean and entail? I mean, there's maybe things you can say, can't say. I don't know, but is that like an infusion of $50 million into this in going private, or is it something totally different?
No, no. So I was talking in the video about the free cash flow improvements, free cash flow, basically, you know, deficit that we've reduced, you know, by $50 million, you know, since the time I started.
Okay. Okay.
Right. And that has come through a lot of kind of optimization of the business model, renegotiating our contracts with some of the key suppliers, like a lot of opportunities, you know, which we kind of uncovered, you know, kind of helped us, you know, get to that position. And because if you look at the financials of the company, like, and it's not just Farmer's Edge, most ag tech companies are like, they're not profitable because the business model has, you know, people have not shifted quickly from the growth mode into profitability mode.
Well, there's a lot to tell us, and other times too. I've seen a lot of, I saw a lot of numbers and balance sheets for groups, and none of them to share. I don't even remember them anyways.
Right.
But no, it didn't look great for a lot. Some were closer, some were a little farther away, and there's going to be a lot revealed in them maybe the next year or two. But
And we've done a really good job in, you know, really controlling our costs and being really pointed and cutting down on initiatives which, you know, really did not make sense, you know, at the time, and being kind of really laser focused and surgical on our how we're managing internally and then how we're trying to support our customers externally. And I feel pretty good about, you know, the reduction that we've had in the deficit of free cash flow, and we'll close that gap. And once, because I'm always, you know, of the mindset that a long-term business model has to be built on profitability and cannot be just on the growth, you know, side of things, right? Because then
I think the industry is shifting to from this kind of let's mega grow, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
I mean, it affected this company for a while. And,
But
I see a larger shift away from that.
Yeah.
I even think some investors are saying, oh, we're not going to support what we used to support.
Exactly.
It's not going to
venture money disappears as the valuation kind of depresses and tanks, and that's the natural kind of cyclic, you know, curve that you see. But we want to build this company for the long term, which is built on the right kind of, you know, financial fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be responsible as a company, because obviously Fairfax is supporting us, and we want to make sure, and I've had this discussion multiple times with Fairfax, like, we'll not shy away from making an investment wherein it's needed and it can add value to the customers, and then we can capture some value versus just, you know, going out and, you know, just making investments, which...
Well, you might get some really, we were talking a little bit earlier, you might get some, I mean, there's going to be some groups going for cheap soon. You might get some really good deals on some certain groups. Right. I mean, it's a process of business. You know, it happens. So,
And
I think that answers, there's some other questions I had on just, you know, where is Fairfax on this, but they seem like they're in it for the long haul.
Yeah.
They want to keep it going, keep it alive, even though, I mean, yes, hundreds of millions of dollars have been invested in, you know, through VC, maybe some private equity. I don't know, but with Fairfax and, you know, the public side of it. But to that point, you know, one thing you could look at is, okay, they spent all that money and lost it. And some people do think that way. You know, I guess it's fair that some people can think that way. But there's the other side is like, well, yes, some of that money did go towards this that didn't work. But as you pointed out, it also built some things too. It built some assets. It bought these things. So, and while I don't need to get in on any of the numbers of any of that fun stuff, I think it's just important to point out in general that there are assets there, and you're trying to, I mean, I just, you know, the three main segments, agri-food and fuel, your insurance side, e-commerce side, I mean, those are your assets. Would you say that?
Yeah, there's a significant amount of intellectual property in the company. Mm-hmm. Apart from, I would say, the hard assets of, you know, weather stations, et cetera. Yeah. It's, you know, but I think apart from that, the main reason that, like, any invest, if it was a different investor compared to Fairfax, there are enough kind of signals for them to basically, you know, just exit and say, okay, this may not work, because not just Farmers Edge as an industry, ag tech has not really, mm-hmm. you know, taken off. But like I said earlier, like, they've done it with a number of their portfolio companies, wherein the companies have, you know, had challenges in the near term, but they've kind of stayed invested, and they've, you know, that has worked out for them, you know, in the long run. And there maybe down the line could be an opportunity if things, you know, go well and the market conditions are in favor, you probably, you know, take the company back, you know, again, you know, public. It's
always an option, I suppose.
It's always an option.
As long as the world spins.
Yeah, yeah. And so they feel confident about the team that we have now. And we've got a, you know, relatively newer executive team, which is a combination of ag, technology, business experience, operations experience. And, you know, so we're, I think, taking the right strokes here in the company and having our strategy match the execution to, you know, turn this around.
Well, and speaking of the team, how big is the team now? I mean, I know it got up into the, what is it, like 400s at some point in time or something. How many are there now?
So our last reported numbers were about, I think, 417 in the, you know, at the end of last year. And then we had an optimization, which kind of reduced the headcount by about 20%. So,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then 300-ish?
Ish. Yeah. Yeah.
People to take care of. Of course, you used to take care of like 40,000 people. So, so it's like, that's like a babysitting, a newborn.
Yeah. No, I think, I think sometimes size and scale, I would say, hides inefficiencies which come to the surface in a, you know,
that is true,
in a smaller setup. And, you know, but we feel pretty good about, I would say, you know, the path that we are on. And, you know, like I said, the first thing which surprised me was just the passion of our, you know, team members who wanted to do the right thing and right, you know, mission. They just needed right direction. And I'm the one who's trying to orchestrate that for them.
You know, considering all the wildness of maybe the past, I mean, anyone that's been sticking around and still sees that vision and all that, you know, beyond just say a paycheck or whatever, if they see that too, I mean, I think, you know, that's a focus every ag tech company should be. It's like, hey, okay, this has been crazy, or there's this ups and these downs, like, but we still want to be here. Like,
yeah.
I think there, you know, while there's been turnover in the past or, and there's been a lot of craziness in all of ag right now anyways, you know, just, I think focusing on the employees having passion, I mean, just going forward with everything you're doing is a big piece of the puzzle.
It is.
In general, and just getting their voices out and saying,
yeah.
And, you know, like I said, there are past criticisms and all this, but the more you own it and say, okay, fine, tell me what you think. And kind of what we're doing here, I think, is it's refreshing to hear compared to how I feel things were before. And I think the more you talk about that, just that's my personal opinion, the better. Better things are. And I mean, that's probably for any company out there, but
yeah. And you're so right, because, you know, I would say maybe we are in the second phase of our, you know, kind of turnaround right now, because the first year and I thought about it, you know, because typically the company had a lot of press releases, etc. I stopped all of that, like all marketing outreaches for the first year, because we wanted to keep our heads down, you know, just focus internally, you know, optimize the model, optimize the offerings, you know, simplify it for employees so that they can simplify it for our customers. And so we are out of that phase one, and in phase two, that's where, you know, we're starting to now reach out more, and you'll see us more in social media. I'm going to these conferences just to listen in, because, like, I'm a lifelong learner and I'm a new person in agriculture, and I want to
just really, put a hat on. It's new CEO in ag tech. Like,
yeah.
Please be easy on me.
Yeah. So I'm trying to learn a lot. But one of the things I wanted to kind of touch upon was this whole soil testing, you know, offering that we are going out in the market. That came out of my kind of town hall with the employees, and we have these two fantastic, you know, leaders who are running the labs, and they said, you know, there's so much of, you know, need in the market, and you know, why don't we go out and sell it? And I started listening in, and then we started to kind of run some numbers, and it was just, you know, like eye-opening. So, and now we're launching it with our, you know, full kind of marketing sales horsepower.
For all the things I've dealt with, I've always been amazed by, there's actually not a lot of soil labs around the U.S. and Canada. Part of that is, I suppose, because, as well, I think you should soil test everywhere. And I'm a big fan of zone soil testing through whatever methods. Certain parts of, let's say, the U.S. and even Eastern Canada don't agree with that as much, which, whatever. I can talk to university people about that. But I think there has been a lack of soil testing throughout all of ag. So if you can get more people to do it, through whatever methods, I think, as long as they're sound scientific practices.
Yeah, I think
there's a need and want.
Data point in one of the reports, like in 2022, only like 60% of the growers, 60% of the growers don't soil test every, you know, year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that to me is like, you know, that's an opportunity where we can, you know, kind of really assist at a price point, which is, you know, not like egregious. But I guess my reason of bringing that up again was it came out of just listening to our employees and saying, okay, where, you know, what are the customers saying? Or what is the need out there? What is the unmet need which is out there in the market? And we have the capability. So, you know, you marry the two. And so,
you know, so milk and cereal make cereal. So,
yeah. So, you know, it's just listening to all the stakeholders, not just customers, but also the employees.
So will that come, I mean, you know, in the beginning, Farmers that started as an agronomy company, is there still going to be a lot of regional agronomists everywhere, or are you focusing on that differently? Because I mean, that was always a core part, is we're going to have agronomists everywhere, and almost it became a lot, almost too much. I mean, everyone had to pick up and this, there's just a lot of expenses around doing it. Is that shifting differently?
Yeah, I think how we're looking at this is like agronomists are, you know, key to this business. Like it just goes without saying, you know, whatever level of technology you can, you know, bring in, it has to be augmenting what they're currently doing. So the way we are thinking about it is, you know, we want to really refresh, simplify our fertility offering, because it comes, you know, with a complex package of, you know, things that, you know, we are going out with the, you know, to the market. And so that's one thing that we are clearly doing right now. The second piece is, you know, it depends region by region in terms of what is our footprint that we want to operate, because once you get certain economies of scale, then it becomes, you know, economically, you know.
Well, you can overcompete with the local group. So, I mean, are you opening up more to some of the other independents and saying, hey, do you work kind of with us, or is there...
Okay. From that standpoint, I personally and my team as well, we've had a number of partnerships in this company in the past that we did not manage well. I'm going to all of those people with almost folded hands and saying, we are trying to reset and we're going to focus on what you need and how we can work together.
Okay.
You know, so that's a very, very strong, clear, simple message that I've relayed to my team, because like I said, everybody can coexist and we want to be complementary and not, you know, competitive. So it applies to...
You might just get a ton of emails after this goes out and people saying,
yeah,
I want to talk.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which, hey, that's all great. So, we've been going on, almost an hour 20. So, hey, good conversation. And I think it's all been great. Just some kind of more maybe ending questions. Just looking over my list here. One that I didn't, I know you've talked a little about where, but you know, before there was kind of a pullback, you know, locations where you are from Australia, and there was some from Brazil and even from the United States.
Right.
Where is the main concentration? Where's the main focus now, you know, worldwide, or where's the different areas? Like what's the key spots?
Yeah. So Canada and the US are clearly going to be the, you know, continuing to be the key market for us. Brazil, and specifically Mato Grosso and Brazil, which is a region that we feel, you know, pretty bullish about. And I was there meeting, you know, a lot of customers, enterprise customers. You know, so US, Canada, Brazil are the key markets. Australia, we had to actually exit just because of, you know, the...
Snakes.
Yeah,
you could say snakes. You could.
Yeah,
that could have been the answer, and I've been fucking.
But I think just with the time zone challenges and the support that we weren't able to really provide to the team for the size of that business, I think it was the right, I would say, short term. I would say, you know,
decision. Well, I know a lot of groups from out there, it's tough for any outside group. I mean, it's a big island, time zone, like you said. So
and India, you know, is definitely a market which is on the radar for us, because with the, you know, just the positive political landscape, you know, they've done an amazing job in digitizing the ecosystem there, like on the financial side, on the banking side, and you know, so that's a market which is of, you know, high interest to us, and we've launched this lab I told you about. We're doing some pilots with a, you know, with a large banking you know, service provider there. Mm-hmm. They're actually, and I was actually surprised with the level of sophistication that they have, even in current state, like in terms of trying to improve on their analytics.
Well, there's a lot of countries like that. And I've written about it a little lately, and I've seen others is, you know, while the US and Canada dominate in these certain parts, or even Europe or Western Europe, there's a lot of developing areas of the world that they can just catch up so much faster.
Yes.
But they can also get kind of off guided really fast too, if others from the outside aren't looking for those opportunities. So I'm sure you're going through that.
Yeah, you know, it's
list by list.
Yeah, one of my other learnings at Amazon and even before, you know, was I think that the degree of centralization and localization, depending on the, you know, journey that you're on in that new market, is very, very important. It's almost probably the most important point, because a lot of times, and I do this with like Brazil now runs on a decentralized model for us. Mm. Previously, it was a central operation where Canada was dictating what they need to do. And we don't have the, you know, local nuance and know-how of what's going to happen. Language is a challenge, so on and so forth. So that model is now working well. But any new market that we enter is going to be a function of, okay, what the need is, and, you know, get the local experts, local partners, and then collaborate with them.
Well, that is a different path from before. Because, I mean, before that was a lot. It was like everything. I mean, there's a small group that was, I mean, and that's how businesses work sometimes, you know, kind of a, I'll call it a mob mentality of sorts. Just sometimes businesses need to do. They're like, this is happening. There's all this. And at times you can get really, you have to do it, but at times you can get caught in that becoming the norm. And especially when things are across the world or in different cultures. I mean, it's agriculture. It is, you know, there's different cultures to every part of it.
Totally.
Eastern North Dakota, where I live, and Western North Dakota are not the same.
Yeah.
Just within that region. I mean, and I'm sure Manitobans and Saskatchewanians, if that's what, I don't know, people call them that. there's infighting there too. But no, I think that's a good point, because I think that's another piece in ag that gets, especially with the groups that want to expand a lot or can, is they just try to kind of hold it too close and don't reach out and say, I need your help. Can you kind of just run this? Cause you know it, we're supporting you.
Yeah.
But can you figure
it out? And that's the right approach, because I think your decision matrix, like you got to take decisions, and sometimes you have to take decisions quickly without a lot of data. But you know, the balance lies in, you know, what's the right, you know, framework to account for the bottoms up inputs into your decision matrix while you have the top down kind of direction. And that comes from, you know, just keeping your ears open and listening, and, you know, then trying to process the information and then, you know, take decisions, which are sometimes, Amazon had this, you know, quite kind of figured out. There's a one-way door decision and a two-way door, like, you know, and it's, you know, two-way doors are relatively, you can make it, you know, fast and furious. One-way door decisions are, you know, I've just got to think a little bit more. So, you know.
Speaking of that, I remember reading that they do this like three pager. Are you implementing that into Farmers Edge, three pager?
So that's a very unique practice at Amazon. They don't use PowerPoints. They do either a two pager or a six pager, which is the version of the narrative, and then you can put as many pages in the appendix, and it's a really good practice, because it makes you think and through all the nuances, and, you know, so yeah, it's a lot of document writing when I was there.
I was reading about it. I just had to ask. I was going to ask that earlier, but because it can be really intense. It's still an intense process to like go through it. But regardless, so I have kind of one last main question. And this has been brought up for a few other people too. And I think it's just a general question around everything. And then we'll just do some closing thoughts. And then I'll probably have a little ending part myself. But okay, you're 19 of Farmer's Edge, if I do my math correctly, because it started in 05. Yeah, something like that. And, you know, there's been a lot of chaos of things in the last 10 years, you know, this growth, these ups and downs and big things. I've been asked this a lot, and a lot of people want me to ask this. Are you considering changing the name once you're going private? Because I think a lot of people think that is a path. Like they want it in a sense, but I, asking the source? Has that been a talk or a consideration?
Yeah, it's come up a few times in my discussions as well, and I've thought about it too. But it's I think personally, in spite of, I would say, the history and the baggage, I mean, I like the name, you know, because it's trying to really create an edge, you know, for the farmer. But you know, as you get more inputs, you know, things change. We may, you know, come up with a different name for, let's say, if the soil lab services take off and, sure, you know, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, and I would have probably taken a much deeper look at considering that if, when I was going to the customers and I was getting shut out and nobody wanted to talk to me because I'm from, you know, Farmer's Edge.
True.
That has not been the case. And, and I've met, I would say, close to about 80 plus customers last year, myself along with my team, different, you know, countries, different, you know, areas. And they, people have been extremely welcoming and positive. And I've had personally a warm welcome into the agriculture community. I love the passion. And
that's good.
And they want the company to do well, and they're liking the fact that we are focusing on, you know, improving their experience and not run into an expectation mismatch.
Well, and to that point, I mean, I told you this right away, and I told some other people about it because they're like, why are you, you know, interviewing Farmer's Edge? You've been one of the biggest critics and all this and history, blah, 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 stories that I've told. And I've said to people, listen, okay, ag tech is a lot of things, but, you know, traditionally, there's been this infighting, call it, for just market share over the last 10 years with all the money and marketing and stuff. And I know a lot of people that just were getting tired of it. And I've seen friends, colleagues that, you know, didn't work. They had to sell for cheap, or they just didn't make it. And
right.
And part of me has been like, you know, there's people that want Fairly Farmer's Edge to fail for whatever reason. There's people that want it to keep going. And I'll call it, I was maybe more of a middle ground just because of my entire history around it and just everything. But I was thinking after we talked, and I think I mentioned this, is, I mean, it doesn't matter how much I've criticized or looked deep or how others have. We're at a really crazy point right now, because if you guys fail, I mean, for all the stuff you've done and developed, that's going to put a lot of others down. It brings everyone down a little peg.
Right.
And it's actually better if it works, because that means if you guys succeed still after all the rough patches and ups and downs, is, oh, these people are using it and there's plenty of pie to go around. Totally. You guys aren't going to control the world on this, and neither is Bear or John Deere with everything, whatever. Name your person. No, there's very low adoption now. It can only be up. So no, I think there's a lot I hope everybody that's listening to this can learn from, just of where the change is and how it's being approached, and maybe take some lessons from it. I mean, I'm doing it as we're talking and thinking through it too, even in other, you know, future podcasts that I'll do. But kind of end things, kind of some closing thoughts. I mean, where do you see the larger scope of the future for Farmer's Edge, or I guess if you would name it something different, but as a whole, it's got good brand recognition, you know, whatever side of it you think of. What's the next 5 years look like to you? 10 years?
Yeah. And, you know, I like frameworks and I like phases. Like I said, we are in the second phase of the turnaround. And, you know, once after we go private, you know, we'll maybe make some other adjustments, you know, internally to the business model. But the core is not going to change, but we're going to double down on the core offerings that we are bringing to the market. And that helps us get to cash flow break even, you know, and then we don't have these, I would say, conversations around profitability and are you going to survive, et cetera. And then I would say the phase three of that, you know, journey is going to be really how we double down on our expansion, working with enterprise partners, working with growers. And, you know, I see a lot of positive traction because one thing is, which is there in public companies, perhaps also more so in private companies, is you don't always get to see what's happening behind the scenes. And I'm a big believer in, you know, it's always a process. It's never an event, you know, the media and the, you know, it's always a flash in the pan and they want to have those type of stories. but they don't always have the insights into what's happening in the background. And you know, I'm going to be on the road again this year, you know, trying to sell the solutions in a way that it makes more sense. It's more palatable. It's simple to understand. It's not a significant dent on any customer's kind of P&L. And that's how you create value and you start spinning that flywheel. And once you do that successfully for a year, couple of years, then the world is our oyster, like, you know, in terms of how we kind of pan out. So,
well, yeah. Like I said, there's in that term, there's plenty of people, there's not enough oysters being used anyway. So there's plenty of oysters in the sea.
Yeah.
And, I think if the kind of this, I call it maybe some people will call it ag tech something 0.0, and I don't really have a term for it, but I almost call it, it's like, let's just kind of get back to the basics.
Right.
Is, you know, we're trying a lot new. I mean, it started off as kind of wild, wild west, you know, and then it got into weird expansion. Like we just built buildings too fast in a sense. They were thrown together. Some were better than others and some crumbled. And now we're like, okay, now we know how to build a foundation. Now we know how to build a nice structure on top. We know how to make it pretty. Now we just got to get people to live in it. And like the house last for, you know, at least 30 years or whatever.
Totally. Yeah.
And I think that's the next phase, is just kind of getting back to reality. And from all sides, from investors to outside companies. I mean, there's with everything from climate change to politics to agronomics, technology, everything. There's a lot to do still. And the more longer people are in it, and I think, and my goal is to have those back end conversations with people like you, saying, let's get to hear what is actually behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Cause sometimes it's hard to talk about for some, cause it's weird. But I'm glad you're the first one to be on my new Ag Uncensored podcast. So Vibhor, thanks for coming on and having me here. And luckily it wasn't too far away, and hopefully everyone likes and shares and subscribes and you guys share it out to as many people as you can. I'll take it. But, and for right now, I'm not doing any crazy advertising or anything either yet. So it's just kind of me trying to get a message out. And so I appreciate you doing this. And I guess that's all I got for now. Any last closing words?
No, I just want to say congratulations on your inaugural podcast, and I appreciate the opportunity, you know, and the partnership to kind of allow me to come out and talk about, you know, where we are and, you know, where we are going. But more importantly, I would say reset the narrative, you know, for our customers in terms of, you know, you've got the right focus and the right sentiment, you know, to make them successful. And yeah, good luck. I wish you a lot of subscribers and, you know, a successful podcast series.
It'll turn into something.
Yeah.
I hope I can get it done on the weekly that I plan to. I don't get that as much on writing. It's actually kind of why I wanted to do this, because I mean, we're here for about an hour and a half, and then it's like writing a few paragraphs that takes like 5 minutes to read seems to take like 4 hours to write.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I need to switch that around a little bit. And anyways, thanks again for having me. And I'm going to end this main session here. And I have a little closing thoughts just around this conversation and kind of other things leading up into other episodes, I guess, coming forward. So thanks everyone for listening, and thanks for having a good conversation.
My pleasure, Nathan. Thanks for having me. Yep.
Thanks.
Well, there you have it. Thanks for one, listening to this interesting, call it first episode of my new podcast, and especially with a group like Farmers Edge with everything around it, as we were kind of talking about. I wanted to do a little exit video here just to kind of go through my own little thoughts around it all, as we all know, you know, they're kind of a larger than life, call it, brand in the ag tech space now for many reasons. But overall, it was a great conversation, and I'm glad Vibhor reached out to me to, for one, just kind of communicate through even some of those initial criticisms I had, and even from the past. And I think that shows a lot of someone trying to lead a business into a kind of a new light. And, you know, I think he's got the skills and the understanding to
to run a business and try to do more with it. He clearly has had a role of expansion from previous work related stuff. And I think he's trying to reset the drive and the culture within Farmers Edge, which is very important right now. Of course, they got a lot to do, but for meeting a few people over there, as I traveled to Winnipeg, I found people that are trying to reimagine some things. They're trying to reset some things. And, you know, there's still a lot of critics out there, and I'll still be a critic no matter what of anything in ag tech, just not to put anything down, just to try to get people to think through it all a little more, as especially right now it's a little complicated with kind of the environment of, from adoption is low to, you know, the income in ag in general is down. So that's going to affect everything. And of course the investments in ag tech are tough too. And time will tell if they can weather the storm and get through it all and provide that, call it different vision and brand approach and value through their products. I think there is value there. It's just they have to do it a little differently this time, and it's going to take some work for sure. So I do commend them for trying and to get through the next point. It seems like they're going to keep on going, and they got an interesting future forward. And I also don't want them to, you know, I don't want them to fail. Because I don't want anyone in ag tech to fail, even if I criticize them a lot or I've given them a hard time with some of their past things they've done. It doesn't look good for the entire industry if groups have a hard time figuring it out or can't make it work. So I hope them all the best, and everybody else trying to learn into this kind of weird ag tech world. So, but some other final thoughts around them. They still have some ongoing challenges. There are some ongoing, you know, legal things they're dealing with. The Farm Mobile case, for instance, is not fully closed. There's another court date coming up in May, I believe, around the settlement amount. I think it was $20 million. And where that goes, I don't know where that'll go. That is a whole different discussion point, but it's still a thing they got to deal with. The PWS part two court date, there's not till the fall of 2025 from what I read. So that's a long ways away from now. And who knows where all that will lead them. Of course, they'll have their own challenges going from public company now to private back again, and kind of regaining some of that trust as we talked about. So except they got an uphill battle, but as we both iterated in there, there's been a lot of money spent on building tools and digital assets, and there's value there. It's just, can it be, I guess, put together right and the right story and the right value prop for others out there? Maybe that is still in Canada and the US. Maybe it is in Brazil or India or other places, Africa. Hard to say, but there's a lot of growth in other parts of the world too. So if some things don't work here, there's a lot of opportunity out there. There's no shortage of possibilities. And I think one kind of final thing to note is, you know, with the adoption rate generally low in ag tech, especially using software and agronomic processes within that compared to the traditional kind of methods, there's a lot of places in this world that are kind of up and coming and catching up with North America or Western Europe on their practices. So I think there's a lot to capture still. So as long as they can keep things kind of going, they might be fine. I guess, like I said, time will tell. But either way, that's my kind of overview of everything in a very short time frame. But I hope you enjoyed listening and watching. If you did on YouTube, make sure to follow this podcast with the handle Ag Uncensored and all the major social media places that I have so far. Subscribe, like, comment. I'd be curious on what you think about it. And please fill me for my next guest and following ones from there. And hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.